Welcome to episode one of Escaping Addictions. This is your host, Bobby Walker. And first of all, I want to start off with defining what an addiction is. You know, a lot of people, maybe some people wonder if they're an addict, or they want to know what really addiction really is. And from my experience and from what I know about it, addiction basically is something that you have to have that controls your life and interferes in your life and will eventually destroy your life, wind you up in institutions, jails, or the cemetery, and it affects everything in your life. It starts affecting your relationships, your job, your reputation, and it can take you into the most darkest of places that you can imagine. So, a lot of times people, when they hear an example of something that, a story of what an addiction is, then maybe better than you can understand or maybe relate. So, I am going to tell my story. I'm going to tell as much as I can. I'm not going to make it too long. I'm not going to give out any too gory of details in the start. But I just try to be as honest as I can about what happened with me. And, how I escaped the addiction. So today, you know, I have to live a life, whereas I go to support group, I go to AA, I work 12-step, I have a sponsor. I definitely do not put myself, I don't drink at all, definitely don't do any drugs. I don't go to places that will put me in attemptive mind state, or tempt me, or put me in a vulnerable position to, like, I don't go downtown to around where all the bars are and stuff like that. I don't hang around people that participate in drugs and I go to friends sometimes when they have, you know, get-togethers or whatever, friends from church or something like that, and a lot of times they have alcohol there, but that doesn't really bother me. If you're going to a place for the right reason, then a lot of times you can go anywhere, and if you're going for the right reason, and you can resist the temptation. When I get to these places, sometimes I see the alcohol, I see the wine, see the bourbon or the whatever, and it's a little tempting, but eventually. I know that I can't take a drink. I can't take one drink. One is too much, and 1,000 is not enough. So they say. So, and all of my friends know that I'm in recovery. So, if I started talking about I want to take a drink, they would be like, "Why do you know better than that?" So, I'm going to take a quick commercial break right here, and when we come back, I am going to tell you my life story. Oh my God, that's a scary thing. Okay, we'll be back in a quick moment. Okay, so now I am going to tell you my life story, which I'm doing this with the intent of connecting with anybody out there that is going through a terrible ordeal with addiction and they feel like that there is no way out or that no one understands what they're going through, you know, maybe they will hear this. And the same way when someone told, when I heard people, when I was ready to hear, when people told their story and I heard it and I connected and felt like that is my story and they had a solution. Because for a long, long, long time, I looked for a solution and I tried to find it in myself and it never worked. Things just got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse until a point where I was damn near insane. And still, I feel insane today. Sometimes I've been sober for a year and a couple of months, and I still feel insane a lot of sometimes, you know. So, I would just say I hear a lot of addicts, they say that they felt like they were different all of their life. And I felt that way too. I felt growing up that I was different, just different from everybody else, that no one understood me, that I didn't fit into this world. And I would have all of these, you know, wild daydreams about tearing up my school with a hammer, brick by brick, wishing that I lived in this world alone and I could just travel the world and see whatever I wanted to see and didn't have to be around people and stuff like that. So yeah, I felt that way too growing up, that I was different from everybody else. So anyway, I was born in Mississippi 49 years ago. I am 49 years old, basically starting over. So my birthday is in September, so this September I'll be 50 years old. When I was born with a heart. I was born with a heart defect. And so the doctors said I would have to have surgery when I got to be 5 years old. So when I was 5 years old, I had heart surgery. And during this heart surgery, I had a experience where I felt I was in the spirit world. And I couldn't find anybody, but I found God. And God said he'd always be there, even when my mom and dad weren't. He'd always be there with me. That always stuck with me growing up. My mom is very religious. She brought us up, me and my two sisters, in the church. So I grew up believing that there was a God beyond faith. I just, as far as I was concerned, God was as real as anything that I had ever seen, and more real for that matter. And I thought that everybody knew that God was real. So my dad was a brick mason, and he worked, and most of the people he worked around were, you know, of the lifestyle of just making money, partying, doing drugs, selling drugs, you know, wild women, that kind of stuff. And I would eventually, after my mom and dad got divorced when I was 8 years old and I got older, and I would go spend the summers with my dad and go and work with him and make money. He wanted me to try to learn how to lay bricks, but I didn't really want to do that. I had other ideas, but, you know, and plus, I grew up with bad resentments to my dad anyway, so we lived in Gulfport for a while, then we moved. My mom and dad got separated at a point, probably when I was about 8 years old. We went out to Louisiana, to this little small city, Harvey, that's across the river from New Orleans. And eventually, because my dad kept messing around with different women, my mom finally left. And so we went out to Jackson, Mississippi. That's where her people, my mom's people, are from there. So we went out to Jackson. I was in school, and I did some things like learn to play the violin a little bit, sang and stuff like that. I was kind of getting into trouble, not really trouble, but I was constantly getting into fights. I was, I guess, angry, and if somebody, if some kind of altercation or argument started, then I wasn't the one that was going to back down, and we would go in the bathroom break or whatever, and go in the bathroom and fight or after school or whatever. And eventually, one of the teachers told me, if you're going to fight, don't fight and entertain a crowd for free. If you're going to fight, you need to make money. And that made sense. So I kind of stopped letting people, manipulate me into the crowd, boosting me up into, because sometimes I would pass the first lick, just get it started. So also, as with many addicts, many addicts have in their story, I will share with you that when I was in Jackson, Mississippi, I was at one point the victim. I can say victim. At one time, I guess I didn't really think like that, but the victim of, child abuse. Sexual abuse from a family friend who was dating one of my cousins, and when that, it finally came out, and that was, that brought a lot of, when I kind of really understood what was really happening and what was kind of going on, that, it brought shame and made me look at myself a certain way. And I guess when the drugs came, it played into keeping me looking for the drugs for some kind of relief from the pain and the shame of that kind of situation. So it also made me question my sexuality in a lot of ways. I was young then. I was like third or fourth grade, 10, 11 years old. So I wasn't really thinking that much. But once that happened, then I did kind of start thinking about it. So it was something that really kind of haunted me for a long time until I started getting into treatment and talking about it and knowing that, well, that wasn't my fault, that I blamed myself, because I felt like that I I mean, I wasn't forced to do it per se. So I felt like I made the choice. But as counselors and stuff would say, you know, you were too young to be able to make the right, make your own choices in that kind of situation. So, but eventually we left Jackson. We moved back out to Harvey or the Marrero. And I started going to Helen Cox. That was a junior high school. And, you know, I started getting to the point where I didn't really like school. I don't guess I ever really did like school, really. And I met some, you know, I met friends. You know, I kind of always, I hung a lot more around, I guess, white kids a lot more than I did black kids. I had a lot of black friends too, but I really had a lot of white friends. And when I did, one thing that I kind of picked up on was that, you know, all of my friends from the neighborhood, their daddies weren't in the house. My daddy wasn't in the house. My friend Michael's dad wasn't in the house. My friend Greg's dad wasn't in the house. When I used to know these white kids, all of their dads were there. So, that just made me look more, you know, kind of, it made me more, I guess that even made me more resentful towards my dad. So, went on through junior high school, went on to high school, to West Jeff High School. I kind of got into rap. I was rapping. We did a few talent shows at the school, and pretty much everyone said I was the best. There was this guy from New York named Ray J, and everybody thought he was the best. But we had a talent show, and I mean, I had to take it to him. I mean, I didn't even really want to do it. I was never the kind that wanted to be on the stage. I never wanted to be like in front of people or you know, the center of attention. I kind of always wanted to play the background. But one of the girls in school, she kept saying, "Well, you know how to rap, so you know, why don't you come and do the talent show?" And so once we got there, and then Ray J kind of rapped on me and can, you know, rapped about me. Oh, it was on then. I mean, I probably had, even the teachers were jumping into it, you know, was jumping, and they were like, "Damn." You know, so then I went to John Eric High School, and there was a situation. I got into a fight with this kid. He was, I don't know what the word is, but he had a voice, some kind of voice. His voice was kind of messed up or whatever, and he kind of talked with it, you know. And so it was, we were all sitting in the back of the class, and some of the kids were back there mocking them, and then they said, "Wiley, quit that, man." And you know, so eventually he started coming back there confronting me. And I said, "Bro, that's not me. That's them, man. That's not me." You know, so he would go back up. He said he went back and sat down, and they kept doing it. He kept coming back there. So eventually, I was like, "Okay, well, whatever." You know, so I got up, and I was slick walking to the front of the class. You know, the bell was about to ring, but it hadn't rang yet. So I was walking to the front of the class, and when I got up to almost where he was sitting, he jumps up, and he's like, "You want to fight? You want to fight?" And before I could, you know, before I knew it, he reached back, boom, popped me in the nose. Oh my Lord. I grabbed him. And then, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but I worked on a brick job and I handled wheelbarrows full of bricks, and it did hard. And my dad told me when I was 12, 13 years old, my dad would be telling me, "Boy, you can do whatever any one of these men can do out here. You can do whatever that, you know." So I would be trying my best to please my dad or whatever, show him I could do it, pushing these heavy wheelbarrows full of bricks up hills sometime in the mud. Sometimes they'd fall over, and he'd say, "Pick him up." He said, "Just pick him up." And so here this kid is. He hit me in the nose. Now, all I see is red. And I just see, and I grabbed that boy and pushed him up against the wall, and I ran back and bah, punched him in the top of his head. And so about this time, the teacher jumps over there, and he doesn't do anything else after that. He says some words like, "You want to fight? You want to fight?" But he doesn't make any more moves. And so the teacher comes over there, and she's like, "What's going on?" And I was like, "He hit me in the fucking nose. That's what's going on." I was mad as I. And so, excuse me for cursing, but so. So she tells us, "Y'all want to go to the office?" I said, "I don't care." You know, and he said, he was saying something. Yeah, he wanted to sign. I don't know what he was saying. But anyway, so we went to first period of class, and then in first period of class, the announcements come on. So Wiley Walker report to the office. So I go to the office, and there he is sitting in the office, swollen, with a knot on his head. And now he's saying that I started it, that I've been picking with him all the time in school, that before this even happened, that I've been constantly antagonizing him and stuff like that. And I said, "Look," I said, "there was some guys in the back of the classroom that was mocking his voice, and he kept coming back there, and I told him it wasn't me." And I got up to walk toward the front of the class when the bell was getting ready to ring, and he jumped up and hit me in the nose. And so I hit him back. That's what happened. And then the lady in the office was like, "Well, you must have hit him really hard, because he has a knot on there." I said, "I was trying to knock his head off if I could. He hit me in the nose. Are you crazy?" So they suspended both of us. So at that point, I was really done with school. So I felt like, what did they want me to do? That's how I felt like at the time. What did they want me to do? He hit me first. So they suspended us. And at that point, I was really, I was done with school. So eventually, you know, I got back to school. I was failing English. And this teacher, this intern or whatever you would call, student teacher, whatever, she comes in, and my grades jumped up to a B. But toward the end of school, I was done. I said, "I'm dropping out of school. I'm going to work with my dad and make money." I'm done with this. And that lady came out, student teacher or whatever, she was, whatever, midterm teacher, whatever she was, She came out in that hallway, and she begged me not to leave. She begged me not to drop out. She said, "Wiley, you can do this. You can finish school." And I was not trying to hear it at all. I was going to go make money, become a rapper, or do something. I mean, I didn't want anything else to do with school. So I left and went to Atlanta. So I think that's where my dad was, in Atlanta. He was in Atlanta. Atlanta was booming. Atlanta had construction going up everywhere. He worked for this one, Ballard Homes. They had houses going up in all kinds of areas, all kinds of neighborhoods. So anyway, so I worked down there. But me and my dad, like I said, we never really got along. So eventually, I leave. I left. And I go back home to Marrero. And this is, you know, I met this kid, Corey, and me and Corey became, we started rapping. I started buying stereo equipment and everything. We would make rap tapes and every raps. And so my mom begged me to go get a GED. I went and got a GED. I went to this community, this little small business college, West Bank Business College, and got a data processing certificate. I never really did anything with it. So eventually, I'm about to get to the addiction, y'all, so don't think I'm... But I need to tell you this part, too. I started... This girl, and well, this was back in high school. This girl, Valerie, she knew my sister and she wanted to meet me. So we met, we started dating, and eventually she got pregnant. So it was almost time for her to have the baby. It was about 8 months into the pregnancy. And I started saying, well, we need to start making some plans. You know, there's a baby on the way. And so at this point, she tells me that the baby's not mine. This is another point. This was almost like one of those passion murders or whatever. I mean, I had to leave town. I think that's when I went to, it was one of the times I went down back to with my dad. I had to leave. So I came back and my mom said that she had wrote a letter saying that the baby was mine, but I didn't believe her, and I never really did find out. I talked to her recently, and she said, "No, he's not." So I just take her word for it, and I don't want to try to go and disrupt anybody's life in a way. But at one point, when I was going through my addiction, I was really, you know, stressing about, what if he's really mine? You know, I'm out here doing these drugs. And so, jump back to where I was at. I was out one day at the Oak Ridge Shopping Center, and I was at the movie theater. It was late at night. It wasn't late at night. It was about 9 o'clock or whatever, 10 o'clock, 8. It was dark. So, I hear this music. And I turn around, it's a video store. It was Video Plus. It was, you know, they had Blockbusters and all that kind of stuff. So it was Video Plus. And I saw on a window, it said you can rent movies or rent Nintendo games for a dollar. And at the time, I'm a big video game player, by the way. So at the time, I was buying video games. I had a Nintendo, I was buying video games. And, you know, I said, I can basically buy it for a dollar, because I only play them a few days, and then what are you going to do? You beat it, it's done. So I go in, I meet the guy there, and we become real good friends. So eventually I start working at Video Plus. So, but on my 18th birthday, my dad is want me to come down there and work with him and all that kind of stuff. So I tell the owner that I, you know, want to go work with my dad. So I go down back to Atlanta. And on my 18th birthday, me and my dad ball out all the way, as far as I was concerned. He's going on about, you know, it's my birthday. And he's probably didn't really mean anything by it. But I took it. You know, very, you know, he was just going on about, I'm glad Wilder Jr.'s, because his name's Wilder. He's Wilder Senior, I'm Wilder Jr. So he said, I'm glad Wilder Jr.'s 18 years old. He's been nothing but some child support. Sorry about that. Actually, sorry about the interruption. I kind of lost my train of thought. Actually, somebody called me, and I'm doing this recording on my phone. I have a microphone that I bought recently, but it stopped the recording. But I know I was talking about my dad and my 18th birthday, and I just say we fell out. He was, like I said, he was kind of kidding around and stuff. But I didn't take it as kidding. You know, I felt like he really did some stuff in the past that really was a violation. And, you know, he was the one that went out and wanted to have the other women, and he got remarried and had a new family and a new son and stuff like that. And, you know, I guess I felt like, you know, you should be sorry. You should be, you know, asking for forgiveness. You know, instead you over here cracking stuff about, I'm glad Wilder Jr. is 18 years old now because he's been nothing but child support and bills and saying other stuff. And eventually, you know, I had enough and I said, look, I never told y'all to have me. You know, then he popped off and said, well, I never wanted you anyway. And I was like, I never wanted you either. And he was like, well, why don't you get off of my job? I said, well, you pay me and I will. And he paid me. I called my stepmother, and she came and picked me up, and she was like, what happened? And I told her, she said, why you know how your dad is, why, you know, I said, I'm not even trying to hear that, I'm done. You know, I was done with him like school. So, I got into, you know, some of the guys were heading home that day, or going back, so I was in the back of the truck waiting to, they had a camper or whatever, I was waiting to leave, and my dad comes back there, I think he was holding, they might have had another child, him and his new wife, because she had two kids already, so, but I think they had the oldest new, you know, my half-sister, I think he was holding her, and he came through the back of the truck, and he said, you better come on, get out of there, and come on back home. I don't even know if I said anything, because I knew, I was like, no. I was already thinking back to New Orleans and Video Plus. Because that's where I felt like I was around people that appreciated me and respected me, and as far as I was concerned, loved me. Mr., you know, the owner, he really, you know, we were family, and, you know, I loved working at Video Plus, so I went back to Video Plus to talk to the owner. I told him, you know, that I wanted to come back and work, and now I was fully in. We went over to Tasty Donuts, had a cup of coffee and stuff, and talked, and he hired me back. So, so I just jumped now all the way into the part about how the addiction got started. So, you know, like I said, I was, me and everybody, you know, Mr. Vince, the owner of the store, was Italian, is Italian, and basically he only had people work there that was his family or very close friends. The guy I met first is he's not married, but he was dating the owner's niece. They were going to get married, and they have been married and have kids now and stuff like that. So, but we were family. If they did anything, holidays, weddings, anything they did as a family, I was there. And everybody knew that I was like the Video Plus mascot, the face of Video Plus. I love Video Plus. I was there. I worked almost every day. I even did a rap. We did a rap video. I made a rap video. So, like I said, we were family. This is how the addiction pops in. So, I was 21 now. It was years later, and it's my 20. Now it's my 21st birthday. It's my 18th birthday. I fell out with my dad. Now it's my 21st birthday, and so now the guys at work are like, "Well, Wiles, we gotta take you out to drink. So you can get drunk on your 21st birthday." I said, "Drink? I've never got drunk in my life." And so that was only more motivation. So the birthday came up, and we go out to this bar in New Orleans, you know, down, you know, if anybody's been to New Orleans, everybody knows New Orleans is the party city. So we're downtown New Orleans at this bar, and here we get, you know, we're all hanging out, and you know, they sent over the beers and everything. They got pictures of beers we're drinking. I'm drinking these beers. You know, I'm starting to get a little buzz, you know. And it's starting. And so you have to do the 21 shots. So they start. We go to the bar and they're ordering these shots. I'm drinking these shots. Boom. Back to back. Boom. And when all of this stuff hit, I felt so great. I was alive. I felt like I found what I've been looking for all of my life. That made me feel made me feel complete and whole like I should be. So I no longer cared that I was the only black person there in that bar. I was on the dance floor dancing. I don't even hardly remember all of it by any means, but I do remember that I just didn't care anymore about thinking about what people thought. And so it was finally over, and I had driven there in my car. So they told me, "Well, you can't drive home, Wiley." I was tore up. So now, me being a good little boy, I said, "I got to call my mom and let her know." You know, I was going to go spend the night with Butch, who was the owner's son-in-law. So I called my mom. I called my mom and I said, "Mom, I can't drive home tonight. I'm drunk." And I'm just saying this, you know, I guess my mom is probably like mind blown, like drunk. You know, I said, "I'm going to spend the night over at Butch's house, and I'll be home tomorrow. Bye. I love you." So I go spend the night over at Butch's house. Butch said, "Hey, you can sleep over here in my bed," or whatever. Not that we slept together, okay? but I do remember, like, there was still, like, a party going on there. I do remember, like, in the room, I can remember hearing Morris Day, "Jungle Love," on the thing. And so I go to sleep. I'm thinking I'm going to wake up and have a hangover. I woke up. I didn't really have a hangover. But I woke up, and I had a new love. Alcohol. And I just started drinking. It wasn't no gradual build up. I was drinking, and I loved drinking. So I drank, and eventually one night I had a big cup I had a big cup of just straight vodka, and I was drinking this like it was nothing, like it was water. I was drinking it and showing everybody how much I can drink. And that night I woke up and I was like, I was dying. I was sick. And it was all I could do was make it to the bathroom, and I just threw up all in the toilet. And I was so embarrassed because it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I know that my mom and my two sisters had to have heard, they had to have woke them up. And that kind of slowed down, well, not really, but it kind of slowed down a little bit, my drinking. So, me falling out with my dad, I always kind of looked for a father figure. And there was this other guy that worked at Video Plus. Now, he wasn't really, he wasn't family. And I don't think that he was really friends with anybody, but he was, you know, he was a good manager. So I was working with him. I was at his store. They had 9 different Video Plus stores. So I was working with him, and one day he just balled up some paper and we started paying. He just threw it and we were playing catch. And I mean, that right there just meant the world to me. It was like, I guess what I always had wanted, that I figured that my dad, I wanted from my dad. So, you know, we started going hanging out, fishing. And I mean, he just became somebody that I was very, I don't know what the word is. I want to say admired, but not really admired, but somebody that it was like just the perfect, just like a father figure almost. And so one day, how long after that was that happened, but. So one day I was over to his house and he asked me if I wanted to smoke a joint. Now, I always had this idea of what a person that smoked drugs, smoked weed looked like. And he didn't fit that. He looked like, you know, well, professional, real groomed professional, you know, manager, professional person. And I was like, he smokes weed? I said, well, you know, it can't be that bad. So, but it was because of the way, it was because of this total loyalty and love and this trust that I had with him. Was the only reason, because I would have never tried weed probably if not for that. Because I remember back in school, they were talking about back when I was in Helen Cox in junior high school, they played this video and they said, this is what drugs do to you. And they showed these kids acting crazy, and one of them jumped off a building and thinking they could fly. And they just said, drugs just make you crazy. So I do believe that. And, you know, when everybody talked drugs to me, which are not, it didn't happen much, I don't remember happening maybe once or twice, but I was like, man, you got to be crazy. But I did. I smoked the weed. And I wish I could tell you, no, I don't wish, well, maybe I do, that it was like the alcohol, but it was the exact opposite. I had a bad trip. I had a paranoid. I had a trip that, you know, it was insane. And I was having paranoid delusions, thinking that now I was thinking this guy was going to do something. He was going to kill me. Somebody was in the house. And, you know, he was laughing and tripping like how I was acting. And I was so paranoid, I went and looked at my car, and it just looked like it was parked way too far to go to. So I said, well, I guess if this was what it is, if he's going to do something to me, I guess I'm screwed. I can't do anything. So, but I stayed there, and eventually he started saying, look, man, you're going to have to go, man. My wife is going to be here soon. I'm like, dude, I cannot drive, dude. Why you give me that stuff, man? That stuff messed me up. I'm like, I was praying to God. I said, God, please let this stop. If this stop, I promise I will never, ever touch this stuff again. And so eventually, hours later, it started to wear off. And I said, oh my God, I survived. I said, oh, thank you. I said, I never do this again. So I got back into my car, and I heard, you know, there was some music playing over at his house. And the music was saying, to me, it was saying crazy stuff. Like, I mean, it was saying crazy stuff. I got in my car. I'm driving home, and I'm like thanking God. Oh, my God, thank you. Thank you. That is over. And so I'm going down the street, and I guess I was playing Ice Cube's Predator album. I think that's the album. Predator. And I think that was the album. And he had a song in there, Today Was a Good Day. That was a popular song that everybody knows about. And I guess I had listened to that song on the way over there, because when I put in the tape, the next song came on, which was about the LA riots. And when it came on, and Ice Cube started rapping, I was like, my God, I never heard this song. Like, all of a sudden, the song just sounded so, like, I understood it some kind of way or something. Like, I never heard it like this before. And I was like, my God, I had this new understanding. And so I went home. And so now I got to listen to my tapes that I've been making. And I started listening to my tapes. And I'm like, oh my God, do you hear what I'm saying on these tapes? And it was the most amazing thing I had ever experienced in my life. I was like, oh my God. So I called him back. I said, hey, I need some more of that. I'm sorry, God. I knew I swore that I would never do it again. But I broke that swore in a hurry. And he said, man, don't be calling me on the phone about that stuff, man. You know how you would see me at work, you know. And then so I started smoking weed. And weed overtook alcohol. And all I did was smoke weed and listen to my music. So I'm listening to my music. And don't laugh. But I figured out who I was. I said, I'm the devil. That's the kind of stuff I was saying in my songs sometimes. And I was going around saying that. And now I start making new tapes claiming to be the devil. People thought I had lost my mind, which I did, I guess. And so, you know, and I was totally naive to what weed, you know, how you smoke it, and it's all in your clothes, and, you know, I was smoking a joint going to work, and all of this stuff, and things just got to the point where, you know, everybody thought I was insane, because I was claiming to be some divine being. I was claiming to be the devil, really. So, at one point, though, I was hanging out with this girl, and she said that I want to smoke a joint. I'm like, cool. So she gave it to me. I light it up. I start smoking. I said, damn, what's in this? She's like, oh, I put a little crack in there. And I said, you did. I was about to. And I said, Because I'd always heard that crack was the, you know, you never smoke, never. The one crackhead that I knew of back in the days got murdered by his drug dealer. Because he was stealing dope or something. I mean, they said crack. And at first I was like, is this, you know, and I said, it ain't that bad. So they kind of opened the door for that to take place later. But anyway, so let me speed this up because I'm still just in the beginning. So anyway, so eventually the job at Video Plus starts to, you know, that starts to go away. Burned up the engine in my car. So I wind up leaving Video Plus and going to Camelot. I meet the manager at Camelot, and he, Camelot Music, it was in the mall, the Bell Promenade Mall. He smokes weed. So now we start hanging out. Eventually, he gets transferred over to Beaumont, Texas. And when my mom, them, they move out back to Jackson. So now I really have nowhere to go. So, and they wanted, they said, you know, are you coming? But I knew everybody was, I was tired of hearing about the weed, and I wasn't going to stop. So I said, well, no, I'm going to go out to Beaumont. I'm going to Beaumont, Texas. So I went out to Beaumont, Texas. And this is just where, you know, this is where stuff just starts to, you know, now I'm off somewhere in a strange city, strange people. I'm staying with Mike. All we're doing is, you know, working, smoking, partying, looking at Dave Letterman at light at night, cracking up. I know this is about the time. I remember one big thing in the social media happening. OJ killed Nicole. Oop. Did I say that out loud? I mean, he was accused. So, eventually, me and Mike kind of that broke up. They were moving him again somewhere. And so I said, I'm not going there. And so I'm moving in with this other couple, which I think their family was in the Ku Klux Klan. But, I mean, they was all right to me. So anyway, but eventually that just gets, that's a whole nother story. So I leave and I go, there's this cook, this older black guy. I go stay there, but he's complaining about me smoking weed. He calls one time, he said, I told you about smoking that shit in my house. So you ain't got to worry about it, man. I'll be gone before you get home. I left, and all I could do now, I go back to New Orleans. So I go to New Orleans, and now I have nowhere to go really in New Orleans. So I go, eventually go back to my baby mama, baby mama's house, but she isn't living there anymore. And so I stay there with her mom and, you know, her son. Well, not her son, but my baby mother's brother and his and her mother. But he's like, he didn't want me to stay there. So eventually he can't get me to leave, so he just buys me a ticket to Jackson, Mississippi. So I go to Jackson, Mississippi. I get there, and my mom is saying, we still smoking weed, you might as well go. So I go down to Atlanta. I'm back in Atlanta with my dad. And now my dad is living in his car in a trailer park. And I'm over there, so all the guys that work, you know, because my dad had big crews of people, and I don't know what's really going on, but, you know, then he had his cousin, and he had another, his friend, and I guess now they're the ones running the company. So all the guys are out here living at this trailer park, and everybody's smoking crack. So I'm out there smoking my weed, and you know, everybody's like, "Man, that weed, man, you gotta get that out of here." So I started hanging out with this guy, and he's smoking crack. He's smoking crack, and he's over there doing it. I'm over there looking at him like, "What in the world is he doing?" Because he isn't smoking it. He isn't smoking it on some kind of in a joint or nothing. He's smoking it straight through a pipe. And I'm like, "What in the world is this guy doing?" And he's sitting there. And one time he hit it, and he said, "Man, try it." I said, "Hell no." He's like, "Man, what's one time going to do, man? Why in the world I listen to that?" I took the one hit. Boom. Now I really thought. I said, "Where in the world has this been all my life?" I really thought that I had found what I had been looking for. So in no time, I couldn't even keep enough money to pay $20 a week to stay in those trailer park. Wind up owing the dope boy $100. I was surprised the boy didn't kill me. So me and my dad go out. We're living up in this junkyard, and you know, this junkyard / chop shop or whatever. I'm out there doing little odd jobs, running the streets. And I quickly find out that the crack game is nothing like weed or alcohol or whatever. The crack game is a notorious cutthroat, you know, get it how you live kind of situation. And one night I said, "You know what? That's how I'm about to be." I said, "I'm doing whatever I got to do. I don't care who I got to hurt, what I got to do." I said, "I'm about to go out here in these streets, and I'm going to have mine, but I ain't going to be the victim in this game or whatever." And I went to sleep determined that when I got up the next day, I was going to get up and just be about this drug life. And when I went to sleep that night, I had a dream that I got a phone call from the operator. And he said Jacob was on the phone. I'm thinking, Jacob from the Bible? Jacob who? So I get Jacob comes on the phone, and he says, "Wiley," he said, "God just wanted me to call you and tell you that he still loves you." And that changed my whole outlook. He didn't stop me from doing drugs, but I hadn't thought about God in so long. I stopped going to church way back. And probably when I was in junior high school, I was going to church with my mom still. You know, we was going to a Black Baptist church. Women, you know, catching the Holy Ghost, dancing around. And I didn't want to go. So I was just worried my mom to death every time I was there, and I stopped going. I stopped going for a little while with this customer that used to come to Video Plus. And he was at his Pentecostal church, and I would go with him. And I liked it until he tried to bring me up front with a bunch of people to speak in tongues. And they said, "You ready to speak in tongues?" And I said, "Nope." I didn't know what that meant. So anyway, at this point, I hadn't thought about God. All I was doing was drugs, drinking, running the streets. And so this is in Griffin, Georgia. So I'm all just into crack. And so it was this one man at work that we worked for. He owned a subdivision out in Peachtree City. And this man was rich. This man is like mega rich. This man walked up to me and he said, "What's a good looking guy like you doing out here?" And I went home that night and looked at myself, and I was just covered in mortar. And I looked like a monster. I said, my God. So I kind of washed my hair and stuff and got to, you know, so they tried to help me, he got me a job way out in Villa Rica with one of the guys he was building his house for. It worked out at this Flowers Bakery. And I went out there, but I was so tired that I think I fell asleep sweeping. I fell asleep on the broom, and I had dreams that demons were coming for me. I still had these rap tapes and stuff, but I didn't hardly listen to them. So I came back. I wound up going to jail. And really, it probably saved my life, because I was kind of getting into it with some people out there in the neighborhood where I was buying stuff. And I got caught shoplifting. And the people gave me 6 months in jail. So it was close to Christmas. So when Christmas came, my mom bailed me out. I left Griffin and went back to Jackson. And now I'm going to really speed things up, because it just becomes a story of over and over, a cycle for about 20 years. I just tell you basically, so I started going back to church. I started going to church, but I was still in the drugs. I wound up going to treatment. I went to this one treatment center called the Harbor House. I went there 3 times. I went to Country Oaks 2 times. I went to another treatment center that I can't remember the name. I went to Friends of Alcoholics. Every time I would go to these places, either I would relapse as soon as I would get out. And a lot of these places, when I went to Country Oaks, they set me up with an apartment. They were going to pay for it through HUD. They was going to pay for the apartment for up to, like, I think 2 years, pay my rent. And as soon as I got in the apartment, I was smoking. I was back on drugs. I tried going back to school. I wound up getting into some trouble with the law with some checks. The DA was coming for me. He had a warrant out for me. I ran to Atlanta and worked, paid it off. And so when I got back down there, this time I worked for this millionaire guy. I worked for his son. And his son was, I was back, you know, back doing my, after I paid, after they kept my money and made sure that the checks got paid off and they paid and the DA dropped the charges. I went back, all the way back to smoking. I'm just smoking. So I started working for this millionaire guy's son. He would come pick me up, take me, he would come all the way from where he was, pick me up, take me to work. And really, I wasn't even really hardly working. He would come pick me up, feed me. And this went on for so long that eventually I couldn't take it anymore. But I just started feeling, I started growing conscious about it. So I told him, man, I got to go somewhere and start over. Somewhere where I don't know anybody. I just got to go somewhere and start over. He said, why don't you go to Nashville? Nashville? He said, yeah, man, they got all kind of recording places down there. You know, you like doing music. So I said, they got a whole music row where you can go. And I said, all right. So I saved some money up. He let me save some money up and everything. Got a bus ticket. He left. And as soon as he left, I wanted to do one more before I left. And what happened? I wound up way off in the projects of Atlanta somewhere. I didn't know where I was. So all my money was gone. Then I tried to sell the bus ticket, but they wouldn't take it because I didn't have an ID. So I didn't know what to do. So I went on to Nashville. I thought to call my dad and say, Dad, look, come pick me up. But I went on to Atlanta. I got to Atlanta. I said, now what am I going to do? I don't have a penny to my name. They won't, you know. And so right next door was the Nashville Rescue Mission. But I didn't know that. I just looked at it and I could tell it was some kind of rehab place. But I said, please. The Harbor House was a shack. And they wanted $100-some. So you're going to have insurance and plus $1,000 up front to get up in there. So I'm out there. I don't know what to do. I'm about to, you know, it's a day pass, you know, a day pass. I'm really starting to get hungry. And this look like Don King, this guy comes up and he's like, hey, what's up, man? Do you want to go box at the Mix Factory? You can make $50. He said $50. I forgot about all my troubles. I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to get high. So he said, after you that, man, you can come to the mission and you can stay there. I'm like, man, I ain't got no money, man. He said, you don't need any money. He said, man, it's free. I said, what? He was like, yeah, man, you know, it's, you know, they let you stay there. They feed you. And I'm like, what? I ain't never heard nothing like that in my life. I felt like that God threw another life jacket, a life preserver out there for me. So we go to the place. I can't box because I don't have ID. So I go to the mission. I do good for a while. And of course, what happened? Boom, I relapse. And I'm in and out of the mission for a while, in and out, in and out, in and out, till finally I said, you know what? I had left out one day with this guy, and it was Easter. And we had ran out and did our thing all night and whatever. And we was coming back, and we were on the bus. And he said, where are you going? I said, he said, I'm going to the mission. He said he was going to the mission. He said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. He said, why don't you come back to the mission, man? They'll let you in. I said, you know what? You're probably right. They probably will. I said, but you know what? I'm not going to the people anymore talking about that I'm about to quit. I'm not about to quit. I'm just going to go in the streets and go do it and just go do what I want to do. You know, so I basically was in the streets sleeping and out in the park. Oh yeah. And when I was at the mission, oh my God, I still got a resentment about this. When I left the first time, you know, if you leave, you got a few days, they hold your stuff and then they throw it away. Or they put it down into the, and all my tapes gone. Oh my God. You talking about, man, what? I can't even talk about that right now. So I'm living in the park. Eventually, I wind up catching a ride with a serial killer to Memphis. I think this guy was going to kill me. I think he was talking about going to sleep out. He was supposed to be going to New Orleans. I said, ooh, New Orleans. I get back to New Orleans, I might can do something. And oh, yeah, because I was in the park. I was walking around the neighborhood and stuff. And this police officer pull up. These two cops pull up in a car. And they say, sir, excuse me, but the people in this neighborhood have been kind of complaining about you being around in here. They don't know who you are, so we think it's probably best that you move on. So I was like, all right. So now I'm thinking, nah, damn, where am I going to go? So at this point, this guy, this serial killer that had been pulling over when I was over in the park, pulling over here and there, kept saying, hey, man, what's up, man? Well, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm good, man. You know, he kept, and he pulls up, and he's like, right after the police leave, and he said, man, you okay? And I said, nah, man. He said, come on, man, get in. So I get in, we pull off, I swear. We pull off, it's about a couple of blocks, about a minute later. And a tornado comes right through that park and tears it to bits. Another life jacket, right? So he started talking about going to New Orleans. And he was talking about doing something else. But I was like, man, once I get to New Orleans, I'm good. You know, I'm thinking in my mind. But we get to Memphis and all of a sudden now, you know, he wants to hang around and go go to the bars and drink, and he's getting me weed and stuff like that. And so then he started saying, well, it's nighttime now, so. And then he said, the Memphis police are bad about picking up people without IDs, so we need to go sleep in the park. I'm like, okay. He said, I got a sleeping bag out there and blah, 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 and all this. So I fell asleep. I never did go in the woods. I was planning on it in a way, really. I went up falling asleep, and he had parked over by his apartments. And he slammed his door, his driver's side door, and he woke me up. And when he did that, something went off in my mind. Like, something ain't right about this guy. And so he went to the back of the car and got the stuff, got his sleeping bag and stuff. And then when he came back around my window, he looked like a demon. I said, man, look. I said, man, I'm going to be honest, man. I'm scared of the woods, so I'm not going. He said, what about the police? I said, well, if they pick me up, I just have to tell them who I am, give them a social security number, tell them we can call some people. I said, but bro, I'm not going in the woods. He said, okay, well, I'm going. You can stay here. So he starts walking like he's going to go, but he comes back. So he comes back in the car. I fall asleep again. We wake up. We're back in the park in Memphis. And he's not in the car. And I'm like, where is he? Man, let's go, man. Let's get to New Orleans so I can. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I do something different than I'm doing here. So I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally, I start looking through the glove compartment, and it's like all the stuff is registered to a woman or something. And so I'm like, man, what's the. So I said, I got to go to the bathroom. I get up, and I'm walking to the restroom. And I thought I kind of saw him off in the side of my, off the side of my peripheral vision on the side. He's off standing off in the woods like he was trying to hide, but I can't remember his name, but I started calling his name. He didn't say anything, and I finally called. He said, yeah, what? I said, what you doing? He said, man, I've been walking the trails. I said, all right, I'm about to go use the restroom. He said, okay. So when I came back, he was gone. So I go to the bus station. I call my mom, and she said, and my sister said, well, my mom said, mom went to church and heard a sermon on forgiveness, and she said, you can come home. So I went home, and I get back into church and everything. I go to, you know, I'm trying to go to school. I'm doing all this stuff. But it's just getting, things are just really getting worse. It just gets so bad. I wound up going to Country Oaks, and I had some new rap tapes, and then I left, and they threw those away. I got into a wreck. When I got the money, I left. That's when they threw my tapes away. So I go over to a friend that I met when I first went to Hines. I go over to his house, and I got like $1,300, $1,400 or something. And I go and I give him a couple $100. I said, man, you know, me and him, we've been friends. He was the one that sent the bus ticket for me to get back from Memphis. So I'm in there. They stay in some apartments over in Raymond, Mississippi, right by the school. And I'm up in there, smoked out, looking at TV. I mean, it looked like, I mean, I was seeing stuff on TV I knew could not have been actual broadcast. So I wind up, I couldn't stay there. So I wind up staying with this other person, and that just turned into a nightmare. That turned into a nightmare. I mean, and I started turning into a very selfish, devious, wicked person. I mean, I was blackmailing his guy. He's an older man too. And taking stuff and stuff like that. And so he and at the end it was some stuff that he needed to get back, and he gave me some money to get it, and I took the money because at this point it was over in Jackson again too. It was like I had nowhere to go. I mean, he was pretty much done, and I didn't feel comfortable staying there anymore. I had nowhere to go. And he gave me some money to get some stuff back that I had stole and sold or whatever. And I took the money and went to back to Nashville. I got back at the Mission. The Mission was different now. I got in the program. I was doing good. I graduated. I started working. And then eventually, I worked for about a year, and eventually the day came, started using again. I mean, I couldn't understand why. I was so sick and tired of drugs by now that it was insane. So I left. I had a van. I was living in a van in Nashville on the streets. Eventually, I got arrested, and the van got towed, and I couldn't get it out because it was too much to get it out once I got out of jail. So I went back to the Mission. I had an income tax check come in. I left. I wound up in this dope spot. People figured out I had money. I think they were trying to do something to me or figure out how to get it, because it was on a card. So they were trying to figure out the number. I mean, they were running all this game, and I left. I got out of there and went to a hotel. One of the guys that I met there, he was with me. I think he was still talking to the other guys. And I wound up way down at the end, way down in a hotel somewhere, if you know Nashville, way out on Murfreesboro Road. So I left. I called somebody from church, and they came and picked me up. So they were going to take me to the room in the inn, but I didn't want to go there. So I went to this other place, and I definitely didn't want to stay there once I got there. So I was calling my mom. I said, "Mom, please send me I'm going to go to the Mission and find this place. I just need a place." So I went. I just need a bus ticket to get there. So I went to the Mission and got with one of the counselors. And I said, "Can you find me another Mission?" Because I used up all my, I think you get two chances to go to the Mission. Not like back when I was there the first time. I was in and out probably 10 times. So they found a place in Alabama, Jimmy Hill Mission. I went there. The people would put me on staff and everything. What happens? Boom. Relapsed. A friend I knew from the Mission said I can come stay with him in Clarksville. I went to Clarksville, Tennessee. I stayed there for a while. Then on one snowy night, he threw me out. I called the police. They took me to the Salvation Army. Went to the Salvation Army. I wound up going to Austin Peay University. I had it made. I had my own apartment on campus. I had all the food I could eat. All I had to do was go to class. But I was I was doing drugs every day, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, and people came in the apartment when I was gone, and they smelled weed or whatever and found some stuff, and I come back trying to find it, and all I found was a note saying that they had found something in the apartment that wasn't supposed to be there, and I had to go talk to this person. I went there. They said I couldn't stay in the apartments anymore. I had to leave. I left. I got an apartment down in Clarksville. That worked out for a little while, and then I had to get out of there. I went and stayed with a friend. He eventually moved. So when I was at this apartment in Clarksville, it was so bad that I was having just deadly psychotic thoughts, that I was thinking people were, every time I did drugs, I thought people were coming to kill me. I was tortured. I was, you know, I would tell myself before I would smoke a joint or do something, I would say, now, you know, when you smoke this, you're going to start thinking that people are coming to do something to you. Don't believe it. But when I did, I couldn't help it. I would be barricading my door, and I was tortured. I was just miserable. I was just in this total agony, and I didn't know what to do. It seemed like there was nothing that was going to be able to help me. I tried everything. I tried church. I tried rehab. I tried myself. I tried, you know, everything I could think of. And so eventually everything fell apart again, and somebody from church filled up my van. And I got another van. The Salvation Army gave me a van. That's another story. And I headed back to Nashville. I didn't know what I was going to do. But, I mean, it was nothing in Clarksville. I said, maybe I can go to Nashville and find a job. What is a job going to do for me? I mean, all I'm going to do is smoke it up. So I go to Nashville, and now I'm so miserable and desperate that I start asking God for help. And through some circumstance, I wound up meeting this lady at a church. I was going there to eat, and she told me about this place. It was a restaurant that helped homeless people and helped them get on their feet. And it took me a while to get in touch with the owner of this place, and it took me a while to find it. But I kid you not, when I walked through the door of this place, I felt God. I felt him take away that obsession to do drugs. That was July the 11th, 2013. I never did another drug then. Since then, now, before it all ended, I started drinking again, because I didn't think that I had a drinking problem, really. I didn't think that my drinking problem was like my drug problem. I thought I could handle a couple of beers, but those beers wound up with me over the DUI and in another treatment center. And when I was at this treatment center, that is when I heard the stories of people who said that they had done what I had done, destroyed their lives, destroyed their families, destroyed their jobs, destroyed their reputation, lived on the streets, been in jail, been, people tried to kill them, paranoid, afraid, and they didn't know what to do. And what they found was the 12 steps. And I started listening to somebody else. I started listening to people. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. I went to that treatment center on November the 2nd, 2018. And I haven't had a drink since then. And I don't have a craving to have a drink. Every day I get up, I ask God to help me stay sober today. Because I know that without help, as insane as it sounds, I would go back to that darkness. I would take another drink. And I don't even believe it, saying it myself, but I know it's the truth. And I don't know why. But that's who I am now. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. And without help, there is no hope for me. And my help comes from a higher power that I choose to call God, and from a support group, and from a church, and from me doing the next right thing. All the time, every day. And trust me, I don't do the right thing all the time, but so that's my long, long story. I didn't mean for it to go that long. But if somebody's listening to this and you know someone who sounds like they're in that situation, or if you yourself is in that situation where you are in the midst of something that you have no earthly idea how you can escape, trust me, there is hope. Ask God for help and believe that He can restore you to sanity and to a life that you deserve, a life that alcohol and drugs has taken from you. You can have back the life you deserve. You can have back your happiness. You can have back your freedom. You can have back your family. You can have anything you want. But as long as we drink or we drug, there's no hope. And it's only a matter of time before the addiction eventually destroys us or lands us in an institution, into a jail, or into the cemetery. It's only by the grace of God that I am here today to tell you this story. So, if you have listened to this long story, God bless you. I mean, I'm impressed that you did, because I was thinking to myself, my goodness, I promise that future podcast will not be nearly this long. But that helped me to tell it. It helped me. So, if you need to ask me anything, leave a comment or whatever. I will do my best to figure out how to reach them, because I don't know how to use this app all the way yet, but I will find a way. And if you were trapped in an addiction, trust me, there is an escape. There is an escape. Okay, I will do all I can to continue making episodes for this podcast. But for now, I'm at 59 minutes and 5 seconds. And the thing is saying the maximum recording time for this segment is 60 minutes. So, I have to go. If nobody told you they love you today, I do, and God definitely does.